Welcome to Landscape Photography World, the podcast for everyone passionate about landscape photography. I'm Grant Swinburne and I'll be your host on this show, talking to landscape photographers about their motivations, likes and dislikes. In this episode, landscape photographer Luke Hassart shares his passion for capturing stunning scenes in nature, particularly in the snowy mountains of New South Wales. He talks about how his previous competitive skiing pursuits led to his love for landscape photography and how his adventures have evolved over time. He emphasizes the importance of enjoying the moment instead of just focusing on capturing an image, and shares the challenges he encounters during his photographic adventures in the high country of the Snowy Mountains. Luke also discusses the importance of critique for improvement, potential aspects of landscape photography that could be affected by technology, and the process he takes to ensure an image is print-worthy. I hope you enjoy the show. G'day, Luke. Welcome to Landscape Photography World. How are you going?
Yeah, good, Grant. How are you doing, mate?
Yeah, pretty good. Good to talk to you again. I know we met not that long ago down at Jindabyne, which was great to catch up with you. I want to talk about a few things that we probably have already talked about, but that's okay.
People listening to us
haven't heard that conversation. So
might be a different outcome this time as well.
That's it. You might have made up some more stories and I might have.
Yeah, that's right.
Made up my own, yeah. Let's kick off. Where did you start with photography, and in particular landscape photography, and what is it about that grabbed your attention and really drives you along?
I think my passion for landscape, so it was before I actually got into photography, but I think the passion of, you know, majestic landscapes was probably back in my younger years. I was a competitive skier.
Yep.
So I was targeted for the 2006 Olympics skiing moguls.
Yep.
So I did a fair bit of traveling when I was younger, all through Europe and through the States and Canada. So I think that's what really sparked my strive for seeing those big landscapes.
Yeah.
Because obviously we don't have that here in the Snowy Mountains. We do have some pretty steep peaks over in the Western Faces on the main range.
Yep.
But apart from that, what do you got? Tasmania? Tassie's got some...
Yeah, Tassie's got some nice...
unbelievable mountains.
Pointy mountains there. Other than that, you've got to go to the New Zealand.
Yeah, well, that's right. And that's only just over the border. I'll be there in 3 weeks.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's exciting. But yeah, basically, back in my younger days, traveling through Europe and whatnot and skiing some of that wild terrain, yeah, I think that's what put the pin in the cushion, I think, to start with.
Yeah, right.
It wouldn't have been until years later. So I took up photography 6 years ago.
Okay.
And I was coming out of a breakup and I just needed to get out into my happy place, into the mountains and free my mind.
Sure.
So I was doing that, doing a lot of camping and hiking. And yeah, I just found myself with my phone, just taking different photos and really getting into different compositions, getting low and trying to make the most out of just the camera phone. And yeah, I guess it was then, and I just thought, you know what, I really need to get a decent camera to capture these places that I'm heading out to.
Yeah.
Phone just wasn't really doing it justice, and not that my photography at the time would have done it justice, but yeah, I think just being out there in the mountains in my happy place was a bit of an escape.
Yeah.
And it was the best thing I ever done, yeah.
Talk to us a bit. Some people who have seen your work will know what you're talking about in terms of getting up into some of the backcountry in the highlands in New South Wales. But for those that haven't seen your work or haven't managed to catch up with you, how would you describe where you live, but also the environment and the conditions that you're looking for to get out in?
So, yeah, basically I'm from Jindabyne in the Snowy Mountains, and that's the closest town to the New South Wales ski resorts. So, yeah, half an hour drive up the mountain. And then you're at Perisher or Thredbo. So it splits in either direction. You can go one way, you get to Perisher and Charlotte's Pass, or you go the other way, which can continue over into Victoria. That top mountain up there is Thredbo. So basically everything from halfway up the resorts is basically the bottom of Perisher. There's like the snow line.
Yeah.
So anything above that, obviously.
That's what, about 800, 900 metres, something like that, yeah?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yep. The base of Perisher sits at, what are we at, 1440, I think, base of Perisher. Yeah. So on a good season and a cold season, you'll get snow sitting and lying a lot lower.
Yeah.
But, yeah, generally, especially the last few seasons, it's not really sitting and lasting much lower than that sort of that 1400 mark.
Yeah.
Mm. So yeah, so like the backcountry areas and how I access it. So in summer, obviously, there's a lot of hiking trails. So yeah, just jump on the hiking trails and head out. There's also chair access at Threadbow that will get you to the top of the resort. And that's a footing start point as well for the hike out to Mount Kosciuszko. So you can access it via the chair and then head over into the Western Faces there towards Kosciuszko. Or you can head up to Charlotte's through the summer and it's all hiking access from there. There's no chairs or anything from Charlotte's Pass to get out over the Snowy River into the Sentinel and Watson's Crags and stuff like that.
Yep.
Just some of the steepest peaks that we have here in the Snowy Mountains. So yeah, basically it's just, yeah, backpack on with the tent and the camera in there and heading out there on foot. And then in winter, it's basically a similar story. If I'm at Threadbow, I can get the chairlift up.
Yep.
And then my access is via touring skis.
Okay.
So it's basically like for the people that don't know what a touring ski is, it's an alpine setup, but with a binding that can release the heel. So when you're actually skiing alpine downhill, you can lock the heel in and ski normal.
Yep.
But when you're hiking up the snow, when you're heading uphill, it's like a cross-country ski.
Yeah. But not as narrow.
Not as narrow. So it is basically a normal alpine ski.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what it has on the bottom, instead of the claws that the Telemark skis have, you've got skins that you put on the bottom of the ski. So basically it's just like a sticky backing of this fabric on one side. So one side it's a sticky bonding element, and then on the other side they're real fine horse and mohair.
Okay.
Those real fine fibers, that's what actually grips the snow.
It slides down, but it gives you grip when you...
Yeah, but if you've got them on to ski downhill, it is still grippy. So normally when you ski downhill, you'll have to take them off.
Okay.
But you can leave them on just for small little transitions. So if you're hiking and then there's a little bit of a downhill before another incline, you can leave them on just to get through that little section.
Yeah.
So they're constantly on when you're climbing. And is that? Oh, no, that's all right. It's a construction going on outside. I thought my laptop was starting to wig out.
No, you're right.
Yeah, so the access out there is all via touring skis.
Yeah, okay.
And to get to the majority of those decent faces out there, it's a good slog. Probably, say, from Perisher or Guthiga out to the highest peaks, you're probably looking at about a three-hour hike out there with a decent fitness level.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's with all your camera gear, all your camping gear.
So you're talking 6-7 kilometres or so once you take all the ups and downs into account and everything?
Yeah, you're looking at about 6Ks, I think, from Guth to Carruthers.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a lot shorter over to like in the Ram's Head ranges over towards Threadbow, just over the backside of Threadbow.
Yeah.
That's a lot easier to access.
And are you camping up there or are you just going up for a day trip or?
Yep. So I do a little bit of both. Head up there for, a few sunset missions and then ski back just after sunset.
So imagine you can't get up there on the lifts or whatever before sunrise, could you?
No, that's right. No, you can jump onto your touring skis and start hiking up the hill.
Yeah.
Which is, it's pretty stunning getting up there for the sunrises. But camping out, I think, you're guaranteed to be there. You're guaranteed to be there if you actually camp out overnight.
Yeah.
You might not get the conditions that you hope for, but...
That's landscape photography.
That's exactly right. It can sometimes work out for the best.
Yeah.
The weather here, it changes so much. You can't predict the weather around this area.
And so when you're camping, you got, 10, 12, maybe 14 kilos of camera gear. What else are you taking with you? You got to take a tent and a sleeping bag and change your clothes and boots and stuff?
Yeah, exactly. So I'll take my...
And all your food.
Yeah, that's right. Normally on an overnight mission out there, my pack is around probably 25 kilos.
Yeah.
And it's funny, every time I head out there, I just think to myself, there's got to be something that I can leave behind to minimize this weight. But there's not. There's nothing I can leave behind.
So you've trimmed it down to 25 kilos.
Yeah, I'm still trying to knock a little bit off, but I don't know how I can. My sleeping bag takes up a fair bit of that room. It's not really a big weight issue with it. It's more of just space. With my winter bag. It's rated to basically minus 30, so it keeps me nice and snug out there, and I never have to worry about being cold. But then my tent and my thermo sleeping mat, that's basically it for the camping gear. But then I've got food and my jet boil, crampons for my ski boots as well. If I'm out there, obviously in winter, I've got some crampons because it does get pretty icy and pretty firm out there.
Yeah.
It's very exposed, so there's nothing protecting any of the mountains up the top, totally exposed and pretty much consistently windy out there.
Particularly in winter. Lucky. Yeah.
You're doing pretty good and pretty lucky if you get out there and there's no wind.
Yeah, right.
And then, obviously the camping gear, and I just take about a liter of water to start with. Most of the times heading up there, you always cross a few streams, and it's some of the purest water in Australia. Run out of water and you're on the top of the peaks, you just throw some snow up and melt some snow.
Yeah, cool. Photography-wise, what's up there and what are you getting shots of? Because there's no trees. What is it that you're looking for?
Yeah. Obviously, you get so many different textures. Yeah, all through the windblown snow up the top, it's constantly changing with all the different wind patterns. So some of the structures and textures that the wind forms with the snow it's pretty amazing.
Mm.
And basically just that soft winter light with those sunrises and sunsets. Yeah, I feel it's quite hard to go wrong up there in winter.
Yeah, right.
Summer's a little bit of a different story, but a lot of the time in summer, I tend to stick down a little bit lower and, hang around. There's some snow gums, north-south Ram's Head over near Threadbow. There's a few little reflection compositions over there with a few different rock stacks.
Yep.
Yeah. So, basically anything that really catches the eye. There's so much area out there to explore that I still haven't even scratched the surface.
Yeah.
And there's still those favourite places that I really like to get to and just try and capture different scenes of that same location.
Yeah.
But, I definitely have favourites that I am definitely drawn to. And sometimes if I'm heading out on the weekend, I think, I'll try and head somewhere new. But then, my rubber arm just keeps pulling me back into the same places.
Yeah, fair enough. Where did it start to become art as opposed to you started out with your phone? Was it always something that you were trying to express yourself, or was it just trying to capture the things you were seeing in the landscape? What was it that sort of twisted your mind towards saying, okay, this is a little bit more than just taking an iPhone shot or just a shot with the camera and saying there's a pretty scene?
I don't know. I guess possibly just seeing other people's work and looking up to certain photographers at the time. And like we all do, we see our favorite photographers and mentors, so to speak, if you're in contact with one of them. Yeah, I guess trying to mimic their imagery, but just trying to feed off what they're doing and try and implement that into what you're trying to put forward also.
Yeah. I think for me, early on, rather than mimicking, it's more exploring and trying to find, okay, I can see that they've done something there. How did they do that? And you can sometimes you can ask and they'll give you quite detailed instructions, or you can try and experiment yourself. Have you done either of those things, talking to people and asking them for help, or have you also done a bit of experimentation on your own?
Yeah, definitely through the earlier stages, and still to this day there's still a few people that I'll send images across if I'm halfway through, or even if I think I've finished the image, I send it through to someone for a little bit of a critiquing. And it's funny how you can not see something yourself until someone mentions something about the image, and then it's as plain as day.
You can't unsee it once somebody...
That's right. So what's that blue colour cast going on? Where's that come from? Oh, gee, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think a lot of critique from a few different people, and obviously workshops as well. I did a few workshops in my earlier days, which definitely helped. I think it's amazing to get that input from the people that you look up to.
Yeah, right.
I think it's very handy. Pushes that skill level to the top shelf within only a short amount of time.
Yeah.
You really see your work progress very quickly, I think, after a few workshops.
Oh, definitely. It makes a huge difference, I think. Having somebody that knows what they're doing, have a look at what you're doing, and even if it's just tweaks here and there, it might not. And even now, I'm still, doing workshops, both as a client as well as an instructor.
Yeah.
And I learn stuff off my clients all the time too. Yeah,
that's the thing about, you'd never stop learning.
No. I think if you think you're perfect and you're done, you don't need to learn anymore, then give it up.
That's exactly, yeah. No, I think you've got to be pretty on yourself to think in those ways.
Yeah, I don't know too many. I haven't met too many photographers that don't think that they're far. They might not think they're far from perfect, but they still have work to do, and they still want to improve. And I think that thinking or that headspace where you have to look at what you're doing and you have to improve on what you've done before, I think that's what certainly drives me.
Oh, definitely. And especially with the editing, I like the editing side of things. You're constantly picking up new things. So week to week, you're trying out different things. And yeah, so I think that's the best thing about it. The camera in the hand, you're constantly learning, and then it still doesn't stop.
Yeah.
You get home into the editing suite, and it's never ending.
Yeah.
Always room for improvement.
In terms of improvement, how do you set yourself creative challenges, or do you set yourself goals at all, or is it more...
Not really, no. Organic? Yeah, organic. There's a few little goals that I wouldn't say I set myself, but I definitely didn't set them in stone, but there was a few little sort of semi-projects that I am focusing on at the moment. But yeah, I don't really. I think having too much of a set plan, there's too much room. I think there's just too much room to upset yourself if it doesn't turn out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just played how it is.
Yeah. It's not that far to drive up, but you still got to decide, okay, which way you're going to go and then where you're going to go. So do you do much planning, pre-planning in terms of that, about where you're going to go?
I have two different areas that I'll set myself. It's either going to be one area or the other area, and that's basically going to depend on wind direction and how windy it is going to, like, and wind speed, obviously. Yeah, because one of those areas is a lot lower and it's going to be a lot more protected.
Yeah.
And there's a few different scenarios I can shoot there. And then on the other hand, same thing again. There's a few different scenarios I can focus on in that same area, as long as those conditions are favorable. But yeah, there's a lot of time where, obviously, if I finish work or something and I hadn't planned on getting out and the sky looks as though it's going to do something.
Yep.
Then yeah, I can easily just grab that camera and head up into those protected areas, regardless of how windy it is or whatnot.
I guess that's one thing that I always think about safety when I'm out on a rock shelf on the coast. Safety's got to be something in the back of your mind. Are you always looking at weather forecasts, even when you're out, and just to see, okay, I might need to pack up and head downhill from there?
Oh yeah, I normally go off about three different apps, and obviously that's going to give me a rough estimate of how it could turn out.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to head out there if it's going to be a full blizzard.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm definitely not going to head out there in a full blizzard. If the weather looks as though it is going to come in, I'll still head out there as long as that wind is down.
Yeah.
I know I keep talking about wind, but if you've experienced the wind in the snowy mountains, it's relentless.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know a few people on this podcast that will vouch for me for that. Yeah, so basically, if that wind is down and I have the time to be out there, and especially for those overnight missions, yeah, I'll basically head out regardless. I do know the area pretty well, but still, yeah, you can't underestimate Mother Nature. I've got a full track. I've got a Garmin, so like an EPIRB tracker, PLB. So that can track my routes in and out, so I can put waypoints. So if anything happens, there's been a lot of times where I would have to follow that Garmin back out in a lot of low cloud, thick fog.
Almost whiteout conditions.
So. Oh, barely. So you can literally not see your ski tips on the ground. A meter and a half away from you, you can't see them. There's been a fair few times that I had to follow that Garmin out. But, yeah, I mean, that weather sometimes produces the best types of photography, I feel.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
If it's a bluebird, I'm very hesitant to head out there if I know it's
really
clear sunrise, clear sunset. If it's for astro, then that's perfect.
Yeah.
In a perfect world, it'd be good to have some clouds for sunset through the night. Clouds come back in for sunrise. Mm-hmm. And that'd be the trifecta.
You keep dreaming.
That's it. That's it, mate. Yeah. I'm very wary of how the weather can be out there in the back. And I'm not going to put myself in full danger, especially on some of those peaks out there for shooting, especially if I'm by myself, then I'm not going to go too close to the edge. It's just not worth it.
Yeah.
How icy it can be out there, one slip and you won't stop.
Yeah, that's it. Do you think the drive and determination that sort of took you down that elite skiing path has translated into your photography in some way?
I don't know if it's translated into it. I 100% you're right, I guess, with the determination and adventure side of things. That's definitely there, yeah. I dare say that. I don't know if it's wouldn't say competitive, but, yeah, that drive and determination, it is very similar with the competitive side of skiing to adventuring out there and capturing.
How do you balance the desire to capture something that's stunning and out there in the wilderness with the fact that you're in the wilderness and it's quite a delicate environment? The ecosystems that are up there can be affected by changes in heat and all the rest of it, but also big time in people walking off paths and off-piste skiing, probably less so because you got the layer of snow anyway. But
In winter, it's not an issue whatsoever.
Yeah.
There's obviously a few metres of snow sitting on everything out there. So, that's definitely no issue. Through the off-season, then, definitely, obviously, there's a lot of trails out there.
Yeah.
You do see here and there a few little trails that sort of skew with off the beaten track. There's a lot of sections that I head to. I'll try and take a little bit of a different route each time I go, just so I'm not trampling over that same vegetation and obviously wearing in a visual track for more people to notice and think, okay, what's down there? So I try and, to divert a little bit from the track I normally take. It could only be a few feet, a few metres, but I think it all helps. And obviously you get a lot of questions on, how do I get there? Where would I go?
Yeah. How do you deal with them?
I'm not rude about it. I definitely I find a lot of those places are very close to my heart, and same with a lot of people. They spend a lot of time and effort researching these places,
to be told where it is. Takes away the fun and exploration, as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly. It's not hard to do a little bit of research to find areas. But there's so many places that have been absolutely trashed due to the fact of, I hate to say it, but I think us as photographers definitely have a little bit to say for that. If it wasn't for so much beautiful photography out there, people wouldn't be eager to get to these places.
Yeah, wouldn't be looking for that Instagrammable shot. Yeah.
Oh, that's exactly right. Mm. And that's right. Half of them are out there just to get that photo. They're not there to enjoy the scenery, and they know.
Yeah, they're on a mission to go there, take that shot, get away, and go and do the next shot.
I definitely try and very politely, let them know that I'm not gonna let them know where it is.
Fair enough.
I just tell them if it's somewhere around here, if it's up in the main range there and in the Kosciuszko National Park, I just say it's up in the Kosciuszko National Park.
Yeah.
And I think all the time they get the point too. They won't keep harassing you.
Yeah.
Because I think those people, it's not the first time they've done it.
No. And you're not the first person they've done it to either.
That's exactly right. So they hear me say that and they know it's just a, yeah, they've heard it all before. And it's like, all right, he's not going to disclose the info. I'll move on to the next one.
Yeah, no, so
I try and keep that very low key.
Yeah.
Unless it's a well-known place. That.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I know I'm safe standing next to Bronte Baths. It's a concrete path. Anyone in Sydney can walk up to it.
That's right. Yeah.
No. But, yeah, if I'm down the south coast, there's a few places down there that I've been that are a little bit off the beaten track. And it's not that I won't. Yeah, you go to the icons like Camel Rock and whatever, but you don't. Don't have to hide that one, but
no,
you know, there are some others there that you want to be a bit cagey about which beach it is exactly and where
it
is, you know.
And I guess a lot of those areas too, like Camel, if you're coming around from the south, then you're not trampling over any vegetation. If
that's
you're getting
it.
Down low on the rocks, you're walking over sand and rocks.
That's it, yeah.
So that's not a biggie. But, yeah, I think that big issue is when you come across vegetation that's fragile.
Yeah, yeah.
And those ones that are out there just to get that photo and then come back home, they're the ones that they'll have lunch out there. They won't bring their rubbish back home with them. So
what about, you mentioned, or we talked a little bit about experimentation. What are the things that you like to experiment with and how do you bring new ideas and approaches into you?
I would say tutorials. Yeah. Like obviously social media. And those ones that you look up to and seeing how they're composing different scenes. And, yeah, tutorials. YouTube's a massive one. I'm a big advocate for YouTube. I love watching different people's channels and seeing what they're up to and, yeah, just seeing how they go about different scenarios, how they overcome certain issues that you might have when shooting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, basically just overseeing different tutorials is my go-to, yeah.
What does success look like for you, photography?
I think just positive feedback from people.
Yeah.
Just the kind words you get from random people that you've never even met. And they tell you how much they love your photography. You don't know them from a bar of soap, but they comment on every single photo that you put online. So I guess that's probably one. And seeing your imagery in print. And, yeah, when people want to buy your images to put up on their wall.
Yeah, right.
I think that's a big one. I think that's success for me.
Cool.
Yeah, makes me feel good.
Nice. I want to talk a bit about work and photography and the balance because I know photography for you is only a part-time gig.
Yep.
How do you balance work and photography and how do you keep life on track when everything's going up on the mountain and you're there going, oh, I've got another 3 hours on the shift.
Yeah.
When can I go home?
things could be a lot worse, actually.
True, yeah.
But no, it's all pretty smooth sailing, really. I'm a subcontractor. I've actually just gone out on my own 12 months ago. So basically I can, if I see that there's some amazing weather coming, then I'll just kindly ask the builder that I could possibly off the site for a few days. And they're always pretty easy going. I think as a subcontractor, you do have a little bit of leeway and a little bit of pull. But being in the construction industry down here in the Snowy Mountains, especially through winter, it can be a bit of a struggle. So in winter, it can work really well because if I'm laying rock, so I don't know if I've mentioned, but I'm a stonemason.
Yep.
So the majority of the time I'm outdoors, unless I'm building a fireplace or something like that, or some feature walls inside the house. So when the weather's absolutely feral through winter, you can't lay rock if those temperatures are going to be too cold.
Yeah.
The mud will freeze overnight and then that work will crack. So, yeah, through the winter, there's a fair bit of good leeway, actually. So sometimes I can average maybe 3-4 days a week on the tools and then jump out with the camera in hand.
That's ample time for getting out there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to this winter already.
Yeah.
This heat's starting to get a little bit too much. It hasn't been too much of a hot summer, but Yeah, definitely prefer that colder weather.
Yeah, fair enough.
But yeah, summer, it's, yeah, same again. I try and do what I can when I can, when the weather's good.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
What's your most memorable experience in photography?
I'd say probably a trip to Iceland. Yeah, unbelievable. That was back 2018 into 19, I think it was. So I went over there to do a workshop with DK Photography, the late Dale Sharp. So went over there, did the week and a half with Dale and Dream. And then I stayed on after that by myself at a motorhome. And yeah, I just hit the road by myself. But the big one was with Dream up onto the glacier into the ice caves.
Fantastic. Yeah.
That day sticks with me most days, especially when it's a hot day like this and I'm outside busting my guts and I'm dreaming about the cooler weather. Yeah, it always comes back to me, that Iceland trip.
Fair enough.
Hopefully one day I'll be back there.
Yeah, cool. What about horror stories? You must have had some hairy weather or something not quite go right while you're up on the mountain.
Yeah, probably the biggest one was not last season, the season before. So I was up in an area that I head to a lot of the time. 3 to 4 different weather apps said there wasn't going to be any wind whatsoever. I got out there, probably a 6K hike from Guthiga.
Yep.
And it was pretty low cloud at the time. It did say there was going to be a fair bit of cloud, but yeah, it came in a little bit thicker than expected. That wind started to pick up out of nowhere, probably 2 o'clock in the morning, and it was getting heavier and heavier. And I started to question whether I do start to pull the pin.
Yeah.
Blew my tent up sideways. So 2 of my pegs ripped out of the ground.
Wow.
I was inside sideways, gear everywhere. I thought the tent was going to rip in half. Opened up, so I tried to roll back over and flatten the tent back out. I opened the flap to see how we were looking, and it was full soup. Couldn't see anything. It was fully fogged in, getting stronger and stronger. And I finally made the decision just to pull the pin and try and pack everything up.
Yep.
I didn't dare risk getting out of the tent to try and pin the tent back down, because I knew as soon as I got out of that tent, that wind would have just ripped the other two pegs and it was gone.
With whatever was in it.
Oh, that's exactly right. Yeah, I literally don't think that my 25 kilo, I had just the camera gear at the time, it was still, still bloody heavy. Yeah, I don't think that would have weighed it down with this wind. Anyway, so I packed everything up I could inside, jumped outside, kept 1 foot on the inside of the tent, started ripping down the poles. It fully bent the poles of my tent frame.
Wow.
To this day, it's pretty kinked. I don't want to try and overbend it because it will quite possibly snap.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's stretched the elastication inside the poles. So, yeah, packed everything up and had to use my Garmin to track my traces out of there. I literally could not see my hand. If I was holding my Garmin fully stretched, I couldn't see it. So, yeah, tracked my way back out. It would have been probably about 3:30 in the morning. And yeah, so that's probably the
scary. How long did it take you to get back?
To get into some decent visibility would have probably been about maybe 2 hours.
Wow. Yeah.
And I dropped low enough just to duck out of the fog and the cloud. Yeah. And I could see the lights of Guthiga out in the distance, which was still a few k's off. So I could see the lights there, and I was getting a little bit of shine through from those lights. And I knew the rough area where I needed to go. So I did have a little bit of speed with me, still holding the Garmin to track my direct route down, because once you get to that bottom section, there's a bridge that you have to cross.
Right.
But too far left, too far right,
you're in the drink. Yeah.
You're in the drink. Yeah. So I had to make sure I got to that suspension bridge, and then I knew I was safe.
Cool.
But those winds, I dare say, I wish the wind speed check up there that night, but yeah, I'd say at least probably 80 Ks, 90 Ks.
That's chuffing along, yeah.
Yeah, enough to take that tent and never see it again.
What has photography taught you about nature?
Probably just slow down a little bit. Yeah, slow down a little bit and just enjoy the ride. Don't slow down too much, because we never know how much longer we have.
Yeah, that's it.
I think just try and, especially out there in the moment and in the mountains, for me, trying to slow down and enjoy what's in front of you as much as you can instead of getting overwhelmed by trying to come home with an image.
Yeah.
Yeah, try and slow down a little bit and just enjoy what's in front of you.
Yeah.
That's half the fun, I think, for me, is the adventure.
Yeah.
Every adventure always tells a story.
Definitely, definitely.
Yeah.
Do you ever bump into anyone, you know, bouncing around out there in the snow? And
not you know, you too
go,
often.
Oh, wow, what are you doing here?
Not too often. I do come across certain people's stories.
Yeah,
once
right.
Back from out there, they pop a story up. It's like, oh, you out there? I was only just like the next ridge over. So, yeah, there's definitely that side of things. Yeah, because a lot of time people don't really throw up on any type of platform. Oh, I'm going here. There's a few people that do, you know, like to head out, and they're asking if other people are going to be around the same area. But, yeah, the only time I really run into people is through visual storytelling afterwards. Yeah.
So you've packed up your tent, you've got home. Are you straight into editing, or are you one to let it sit and marinate for a while?
I let it sit. Yeah, I let it sit. It could be a few days. It could be a week and a half. Yeah, I think for me, editing, I have to be in the mood also. I can't just force myself to jump straight into it. But yeah, like you said, there's definitely that marinating period that I like to just leave it sitting there for a few days, a week, whatnot, and then have a little bit of a scrounge through and see what's there. Sometimes I do like to throw everything and try and back everything up.
Yeah.
But still, I won't really edit anything, for at least a few days to a week.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
So have you got a process that you follow? How long is it? 5 minutes on an image, an hour, or a day? Or
it can vary, but generally I would say it's probably nothing under half an hour. And I'll revisit that image quite a few times. Yeah, I'll just maybe spend probably 25 minutes, half an hour, and then let it sit.
Yeah.
I won't touch it again for another day. Generally, I don't normally leave them in between visits for more than a day. So I'll try and jump back into it the next day, have a little look at it, see what's jumping out at me that doesn't feel right. Have another little play around with it, leave it again. I could come back to the same image maybe 4, 5, 6 times.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And always still on that 5th, 6th time, still find those little things that just don't seem right. Yeah. No, there's many times, especially I'm a lot better these days, but years ago, I would just try and get an image out there as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would just try and rush it, and I'd throw it up online. I'd look back on it the next day and just, what was I thinking? Did I have a bloody magenta photo filter on it? What was I, how did I not see that color?
Yeah,
there's a lot of things, that jump out, especially when you leave it those few days. It definitely makes a difference, I think.
I think it does make a difference revisiting it a few times. I probably don't go to the extreme of 6 or 7, but I'm three to five most times. It depends a bit on the shot. If it's a place I've been before and it's one that I'm looking at going, yeah, it's a nice shot, I'll chuck it up anyway, but it's not portfolio worthy.
Yeah.
If I'm working on something that's for a collection or a portfolio, then it's a little bit different.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I think it just depends on the image and, on the conditions at the time too. Depending on conditions can have a big impact on obviously how that editing goes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
The biggest part in the editing.
Yeah. So have you got a set workflow that you run through?
Not really. Okay. No, I don't have a set workflow.
You take each image on its own.
I take each image as it comes. Like I said, a lot of the images will need a bit more work than others. And with a certain workflow, that might not work for a certain image. So, I just take it how it is and just, go accordingly, really.
You mentioned you print a bit of your work. Are you printing for yourself or are you printing for clients?
I get my work done from Gold Coast Printing and Framing.
Okay, yep.
Up at Mudroobar. And, so basically I send them the file once I get an order. And at the moment it's just through my Instagram and Facebook. My website's not up and running at the moment.
Yeah, okay.
I shouldn't be too far off. But, just through my photography Facebook page and Instagram. Yeah, so they'll send me some inquiries and I'll just have a quick little chat with them and know what they're looking for and what medium. And I've got a price sheet and options for them.
Nice.
I send that through to them and yeah, we just go from there.
Yeah, cool.
Some file up to Wade and Cara, who have Gold Coast Printing and Framing. And
most of my clients that come to me that way, they ghost after you, even before you tell them the price sometimes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, a lot of them,
I love your work, love a print.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you go, okay, what sort of paper do you want? Do you want it glossy? Yeah. Do you want it metallic? Do you want it an acrylic?
Yep.
The prices are different on each. And then they don't respond and you go.
Yeah, don't worry, mate. You and me both, as well as I think 95% of photographers out there that do try and sell prints.
It's a tough gig trying to do it that way.
You can't. It's not sustainable just trying to do it through printing.
Talking about dealing with disappointments, how do you deal with stuff going wrong or where you've got a creative block, you're just not feeling it? What do you do?
I guess it's bound to happen. I don't know about the creative blocks, but when things don't go to plan, a lot of the time, unless it's through big time self-error, you've only got yourself to blame. But a lot of times if things don't really come together, it's probably because of the weather.
Yeah, and right.
You can't control that either. The only way you can get over that and try and step up a level from those downfalls is just getting back out there. Tomorrow's a new day and the sun will rise again. The weather will do its thing. Hopefully better luck next time. Creative blocks, I don't really go through them. I think I probably would if it wasn't for where I live. I think for me, having the backyard that I do have here, it's pretty quick and easy just to grab the camera and get to somewhere close. If I had to jump in the car and drive 2 to 3 hours to my closest scenic photographic area, then it probably would be a different story. But being here, it's quite easy to just get out there and whether it be experiment with whatever it may be. But yeah, I think with the snow gums around this area for me is a big one, and I have a lot of love for the snow gums in this area.
Yeah.
How resilient those trees are. And to capture them in all different seasons also, there's always something to do with snow gums, I feel.
Yeah, right.
Close textured shots. Yeah, there's a lot of areas that you can focus around, I think, with nice, beautiful trees as the snow gum.
Yeah, cool.
So a lot of time, if I am feeling a little bit down and having maybe a semi-block, then...
Yep.
Yeah, the snow gums is always where I head to. Even if I haven't shot for a week or two, I do notice my, what do you call it, mental block. I guess just my attitude changes a little bit if I haven't shot for a little while. So I do start to feel a little bit down and I'm missing something. And obviously it's that camera in the hand.
Yeah.
So when that happens, that's when I grab the camera straight to the snow gums.
Yeah, cool. Where do you see photography in society?
Where do I see it progressing and going?
Just where do you see it in general? What's its place in society that you...
I think it's always going to have a place, regardless of what genre of photography it is. I feel landscape photography will always be there. There may be a few different aspects that AI could potentially have a big impact on.
Yep.
But I think for landscape photography, I think it's always going to be as progressive as it is at the moment. There's always going to be those people that love the outdoors and love that sense of adventure. And I think they're the ones that are going to keep it alive for landscape photography. It will be pretty easy to take the back seat and sit on your laptop and type in a few prompts. But for me, that's not the way it's going to go for me. Like I said earlier, it's all about the adventure, being out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the photography, I think, just puts the icing on the cake. So in society, I think I think landscape photography, I feel, is safe at the moment. Product photography and stuff like that could be a bit different. Wedding photography, I think, is always going to stay pretty strong.
As long as there's weddings.
That's true. As long as we don't get another round of COVID or something like that shuts everyone down. But
yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I think there's I think we're pretty safe at the moment.
Yeah, cool.
And same with on that topic with landscape photography being safe. Once again, those keen ones are always going to stick to their cameras instead of a phone over a camera.
Yeah.
Technology and how the cameras are getting on phones these days, I think a lot of people will turn to not happen to carry that weight and the extra gear.
Yeah.
Having something small in their pocket that they can capture 45 megapixel files. But for me, yeah, having that camera there, opening the bag, setting the camera up, getting that composition dialed in, yeah, that'll never change for me.
No, that's excellent. What's your favourite thing about being a photographer?
The constant adventure. I think just being outside in nature.
Nice.
I think that's got a lot to play, I think, just being out there in the outdoors on the human body itself and the mentality and, yeah.
Yeah, excellent. What about the worst thing? What's your least favourite thing of being a photographer?
The least favourite? Carrying 25 kilos on my back every time I head out through winter.
Yeah, but that's a choice.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. That totally. Yeah. Yeah.
You could go with one lens.
That's right. But then that's one thing that I have contemplated. It's like, all right, I'll head out there and I'll just focus, say, on my wide angle.
Yeah,
or
right.
Or vice versa. Just take the tele zoom and only focus on that. But then that time that I do that is when I'm probably going to miss the best opportunity that I've
yeah you see something that oh, I wish I had my zoom or yeah. I wish I had the wide.
Yeah, no, that's right. I don't know, maybe the downfall of certain areas getting trashed and overrun by popularity, I think.
Yeah,
yeah, having certain areas that were once relatively unknown
to
this day every man and their dog have an image of a certain area.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's the? I think it's sad to see some of those areas start to decline.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. What's the best and or worst piece of advice anyone has given you?
Oh, best is to just keep shooting. Get out there and take as many photos as possible. I guess that one frame that you don't shoot is probably that image that you might need. So just take more photos than necessary.
Yeah.
Try a few different exposures and just try and bring home as much as you can. It can't hurt. It's digital photography. You can load that card up and you can empty it out pretty quick as well.
Yeah, cool.
Worst piece of advice? I don't know. Worst piece of advice?
No, that's fine. No worries.
Yeah.
Are there any photographers that you think I need to be talking to?
There's so many. I think you've had a fair few of them on already. Have you had Kai Hornung on before?
I haven't, no, not yet.
You haven't? German fella?
Yeah, I know his work.
Yeah, yeah, he's definitely worth talking to. Seems like a very humbled guy.
Yep.
Jose Catabrosa?
Yep, know his stuff too, yeah.
Yep. Approach him. He might not jump on. But yeah, definitely G him up.
He might have some suggestions for other people as well. But.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Who else? Trent Blomfield?
No, I don't know Trent. No. I haven't seen his stuff.
Yep. Look up Trent.
Perfect.
He works as a guide for DK Photography now.
Yeah, okay. Cool.
Not DK, but well, for Dream Photography Workshops.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe try him.
All right. Sounds good.
Yeah, give those few a go and see how you go.
All right. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
I got the final question for you, which many people want to get to the bottom of. Do you like pineapple on pizza?
I do. Yeah. I do.
I thought you might.
Yeah. What made you think that?
Oh, hey, you seem like the Hawaiian
pineapple
pizza
type of guy. Yeah, no, I wouldn't throw it on every pizza. There's certain pizzas that it'll definitely go on. But yeah, I believe it belongs on certain pizzas.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. What about you?
I'm on the fence. If it's there, I'll eat it. If it's not there, I won't order it.
Yeah,
Don't go out of my way to get it. But if it's there, it's fine.
Yeah,
Totally fine with it.
The Hawaiian pizza wouldn't be a Hawaiian pizza without pineapple, would it?
Oh, well, it'd just be a ham and cheese.
That's right. It's a pizza dedicated to pineapple, really.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm all for it.
Yeah, excellent. All right, it's been brilliant catching up with you again, mate. And to give you the opportunity to let people know where they can find you.
So yeah, just your normal Instagram, Luke_Hassart, HASSARRT. And I've got a photography Facebook page as well, Luke Hassart Photography. And hopefully that website should be up and running in, yeah, hopefully 3 to 4 weeks.
All right, brilliant.
Yep.
So thanks very much, mate.
All good, mate. Thank you. You take care.
You too.
See you, mate.
Thanks again for listening to Landscape Photography World. Hope you enjoyed the show and keep listening because I'll be joined by some great guests in upcoming episodes. You can find my work in this podcast at grantswinburnephotography.com. I'm also on Vero, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook. I'm Grant Swinburne. Hope to see you out shooting soon.